once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure on this Christmas Eve of 2016, which sounds to me more and more like it ought to be a science fiction novel or something.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yes, have a very Merry Christmas. And why do we have Merry Christmas instead of Happy Christmases? The British all have Happy Christmases.
I can have a Happy Christmas if I want to. What do you mean we don't have them? I can, if I want to. I want.
Yeah,
to
but I mean the British wish each other a Happy Christmas, and we have Merry Christmas, which is Old English.
But they go to hospital, and we go to the hospital.
But they also have Boxing Day, which I think should be instituted in the United States.
They do not teach math in their schools.
The maths.
Yes, it's plural because it's an abbreviated form of mathematics.
Right.
So they believe that math should be pluralized as well.
So we speak, as Winston Churchill said, the
two countries divided by a common language.
Right. Or an uncommon language.
But we have windshields, they have windscreens.
Yes.
And which is definitely not a screen. It's probably not a good shield either. It's made out of
glass. Well, it's a shield. It stops the wind, but it won't stop much more than the wind. But, you know, I think – but they have bonnets and we have hoods.
Yeah.
So, anyway, the personal wealth coach takes – if this is December 24th where you are of 2016, you can give us a telephone call in here at 254-773-1400. And it used to be we had a toll-free number, but with everybody using cell phones, toll-free numbers are going the way of the dodo bird.
People are walking up and eating them?
They didn't eat them. They just shot them, and they died. People didn't actually
eat. Some people ate the dodo
birds. Very
yeah.
few of the British that were killing dodo birds ate them. They just shot them for sport.
Wow.
It was just kind of fun because they didn't do much. They just stood there, and you could shoot them, and they'd fall over and die.
It's kind of going out and shooting cow patties because they don't run away.
It's yeah,
kind of fun, except you can't make the cow patty extinct by shooting them.
Right. I completely agree. Anyway, we were talking about economic stuff, and there was a subject that is, I think, now that we used to say, we were talking about how wonderful it is. We're running off debts. When everybody
we're
else
running
was,
what?
The United States was borrowing money as we came out of the recession and spending it, which helped us get out of the recession. And we were encouraging that, and we were saying that's a good idea. We're not doing enough of that. When it seemed like everybody that we know was saying, no, we need to cut spending. We need to reduce the deficit. Well, now we're going to take – at least I'm going to take – this is Jeff. I'm going to take the – I haven't talked to Jake about this. I'm going to take the other tack. Now that the economy is recovering, we should be talking about reducing the deficits to below the growth in gross domestic product so that we can start paying off debts. However, this year, as I have noted before, as we have noted before, neither political party had anything about cutting the deficits in their platforms. They had nothing about paying off debts in the platforms. Both political parties said we need to spend a lot more money. The Republicans said we need to spend more money and cut taxes. That's pretty fascinating. And the reason I say that's pretty fascinating, do you remember the same – maybe some of you out there can remember back in ancient history, the Republican Party that was focused on cutting spending – and reducing the deficits. I don't know. It's been so long since they did that, like last year, that we've probably forgotten. But as a result of the change in attitude in Congress, now remember, this is critical to remember, a spending bill must originate in the House of Representatives. So all the money that was spent in fiscal year 2016, which ended September 30th of this year, was spent at the direction of the conservative Republicans who control the House of Representatives. And our deficit for the fiscal year ending September 30th, 2016, was $587 billion. That's the highest since 2009. And if you don't remember, in 2009, the Democrats controlled both houses and were just spending hand over fist, and the Republicans were screaming about the fact that the deficit was too high.
I'm sorry. Pardon me. Are you expecting consistency out of politicians?
No, I'm expecting our listeners to listen to this and realize how inconsistent and irrelevant and how strange this is.
Well, this is something we should that should not be surprising to any of our listeners, that politicians stand watching. We need to watch them. We elect them. We need to hold them accountable. This is just pure republic type stuff. If you're looking at somebody that you elected and said, I don't have to think about it anymore, he told me or she told me we're going to cut spending, let's hold them to it.
But this is the point, and you who are listening to this radio program, the vast majority of you have John Carter, conservative.
Well, I don't even know. We get a lot of podcast listeners.
But I mean, the people who are listening here in Central Texas, and if you don't know who your congressman is, figure it out.
Yeah, I think most people listening to this program know who their congressman
but
is.
But John Carter, well, I was surprised how many people in Austin didn't, mainly because Austin got divided up into a number of congressional districts.
Yeah,
there's
like 12 different congressmen in there.
But this is the point. Your representative represents you in Congress. The same, if you're in Central Texas, the same representative who was screaming we were spending too much money. And the same Republican Party now controls both houses of Congress. And in a year they control Congress, we see the deficit rising to the highest level it has been, the debts rising to the highest level they've been since 1950. The deficit's actually higher as a percentage of GDP than it was in 1950. But the last time the total debt as a percentage of GDP was this high was in 1950, because we were still paying off World War II debts.
Right. And those of you that have listened for very long to our program know that we consider some amount of debt in the governmental level to be healthy for the whole system. Over debt is a problem. When we're racking up debt consistently and faster than we're able to grow the economy, that's not a good thing. That's going to catch up with us. It's something that is, to use a technical term, bad.
The Congressional Budget Office, the reason I bring this up is the Congressional Budget Office just issued its annual report that it does just before Christmas every year. And it said to hold the national debt to the same percentage of GDP that it is now would require a permanent spending cut or tax increase of 1.7% of the gross domestic product of the United States, which is huge.
Yes.
But the Congress and the president, who we just elected, have stated their intent is to cut taxes and increase spending. Now, I'm not saying that's wrong.
There have been some really good articles on that when talking to the congressional folks that are putting it together. They're working hard on simplifying the code and leaving it revenue neutral, which means that they're really not working hard on cutting taxes. They're working hard at simplification. So we'll see what actually comes out. We'll see. And listeners need to know, if nobody else reads these things, it's likely that one of us is going to put our eyeball on the thing and see what's going on.
It's not me.
It is not I.
Anyway, is it that?
Yeah, I think the phone is not on silent. So here we go. We're gonna add a caller to our list. Caller on 773-1400. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Caller. Yeah, I was just gonna ask a question. Do we, the American voters, do we have a responsibility to try to help Donald Trump drain the swamp, but start at home by draining the swamp?
What do you mean?
As in Republican or Democrat representatives who just spend more money. They never try to save any.
Well, you, first off, they can't save money. The second thing is, do we need to increase defense spending? Yes, I think so. Do we need to increase spending on infrastructure? Yes, I think so. But, and this is one of those strange things that Americans don't like to hear this, of all the developed countries in the world, we have the lowest personal tax rates. Now, nobody, including this guy right here, who pays probably more taxes than the combination of most of the people who listen, because I have a business. We have a business. The point is that, frankly, the idea of cutting taxes personal income taxes, particularly for upper income people, at this particular moment in time, and I'm going to say this with a great deal of unpleasantness in my gut, but logic in my brain, we do need to spend more money. We've cut a lot of the waste out of the system, although there's certainly some there, but it's pork barrel waste that the congressmen love. But the bottom line to it is we need to have a more solid defense spending. I completely agree. We need to buff up the federal highway system. But then again, we haven't raised the federal tax, despite inflation eating it down. We haven't raised the federal tax on gasoline that pays for those highways in many, many, many years. So
let me come back and answer.
We're headed towards a brick wall.
Let me answer your question directly. Is it the voters' responsibility to that you asked a specific question? I'm going to make it a more general and broad question. Is it the responsibility of the voter to hold their elected officials accountable? Yes, absolutely. If you're a responsible voter, it is your responsibility. And that means that communication with your representative saying, you said this, I supported you in it, and then you did that, whatever it is. It doesn't really matter. And then if they can't define for you a good reason why they changed their mind, this is the hardest part. Finding a responsible person to run to replace them. Because what I've found, and most people have found this, is that most people that run for government are doing it for ego reasons. And we need to get some statesmen back out there. And I'm not volunteering. Well, it's not a job most people want to have.
Let me put something in here. And that's what you just said. I'm going to feed it back to you. We are underspending. The federal government is clearly underspending on its major issues right now, which is, for example, highway and defense. Saving money means we got to cut spending somewhere. But you don't have to save money. Let me tell you, as a person who's watched a business, who's been the driving force in a business developing, Jake was with me in this, and we did this together. When we found that we needed to increase our expenses to do the job right, what we did is we increased our revenue by increasing the base of the revenue and figuring out how to increase our revenue without damaging what we were doing so we could do a better job at what we were doing. When you say to a congressman, cut my taxes and find some place to save money on spending when they've already saved the money on spending, guess whose fault it is that they run up a bigger deficit?
Well, I see so much government waste. I mean, just ridiculous, idiotic waste. Why don't we start with cutting the waste?
Well, tell me what the waste is that you see.
Well, Trey Gowdy just had a thing on the Fox News describing some government program. For example, $2.5 million to study how to have a successful first date. You know,
you're right.
And I'm talking about billions and billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. I can personally describe a thing here close where they just totally wasted $2 billion with a B dollars. Mm-hmm. Just total waste.
On what?
So why don't we start?
What did they waste it on?
I'll have to sit down and describe it to you, but it's just an idiotic waste. But the thing with Trey Gowdy's report on Fox News this morning demonstrates billions and billions of dollars studying things like the mating habits of the South African tree frog, that type kind of stuff.
Why don't we start
with that?
You're right.
I got a good one for you. This is a good one. We can show some immediate waste. The Affordable Care Act website, to get its healthcare.gov, before it was finished, cost $2.1 billion with a B. And I can tell you with a great deal of certainty, Microsoft's website did not cost $2.1 billion. There is no major corporation in the world that would spend that kind of money on their website. Now, they want really good functional websites. Well, that's not what the Affordable Care Act got in its healthcare.gov website. They got a broken system that they spent a huge amount of money on.
And here's the problem. We jump on a congressman. and that's what's going on. That's why I have some hope for the Trump administration, by the way. We jump on anybody who goes into government that knows what they're doing. So what happens is, and this is where we need, if we're going, we can cut. There's no question we can cut. And every analyst, including the Office of Management, Budget, and everybody else who's looked at this, says, yeah, we can cut maybe 2% off the federal budget by attacking things like you're talking about. That is like cutting your spending 2% for the year. And it is insignificant if you've got a if you're running a huge deficit. Because the bottom line to it is, if we only had right now defense, Social Security, Medicare, and basically what else? Those?
Yeah, those are it would defense, yeah. and Medicare, Social Security, basically the entitlements,
yeah, basically,
whether that's
right,
military retirements and civilian retirements for the government.
If we just had that, we'd still have a deficit.
Yeah.
So we could cut all the other spending out of the government. 100% of the frog studies and 100% of the FBI and 100% of the Coast Guard and 100%, I mean, of immigration and national defense. You could cut all of those out of the government.
And
we
still
have
a deficit.
That means taxes are too low.
Or it means that our spending, and this is the hard one. This is the one, even after mentioning healthcare.gov, this is something we have to deal with, period. No further conversation beyond that. Social Security and Medicare cannot continue to function the way they are. The amount of money that we're spending on them, because Congress didn't set any money aside, they couldn't. The amount of money that we're spending on them with defense means that we cannot have a surplus. And if we raise taxes enough to pay for all the things that we're spending, we'll slow the economy down to where it's crawling forward.
I'm going to tell you, if you really want to know about this, Barron's, which is a digital and paper publication, which if you go to get it, is going to cost you something if you get the whole thing. But their lead article in today's Barron's is their recommendation on how to get the United States growing again and how to balance the budget. And it is, they have the graphs in there and they show where the money is being spent, and they ruthlessly, analytically come down to the fact that here is what has to happen if we're going to avoid having a crisis in the future. Now, let me tell you what I think is really going to happen is Congress people are going to continue to run and the president's going to continue to run on the issue of let's cut taxes and increase spending, because people like it when the government
feels
gives them
good.
Money.
Feels good.
And they like it when the government cuts their taxes. What they don't like is when that particular chicken comes home to roost.
Right. And that chicken's going to come home to roost. The Social Security Medicare issue. There are some
and
solutions.
Obamacare.
And Obamacare. And the prescription drug care benefit, and every number of entitlements that we've got out there, particularly unfunded ones, but any of them, funded or not, they're not being funded at the right level. What has to happen here, and this isn't me saying I don't like people, so let's take their money away. This is me saying there's not enough money to go around. How do we do this? We need to means test Social Security and Medicare so that not everybody gets their retirement. Now, I've been promised that retirement. So is everybody else that's paid into the system. If we don't means test it and take it back and say, we got to figure out a way where we can make this work, because when Social Security was first developed, we had 32 workers per retiree. We now have two. And it's moving down to fractional, one point something people per retiree. Well, that means that two people are working to give themselves an income and to support somebody else who they don't even know.
And when Social Security was put in place, the retirement age initially wasn't 65, it was 62.
And people weren't living very long.
Well, now the life expectancy average in the United States was 65. So Social Security, on average, only paid for 3 years. Today, there are people are getting Social Security at 66. And if they get Social Security at 66, on average, they're living 20 years.
And that's today. People are living longer. So in 5 years, they may be living 25 or 30 years. And so, it may be faster than the years are coming along. So the idea here, this is important. When Social Security was first developed, it was because people were starving to death in their old age during the Great Depression. Just like people being turned away at an emergency room when they have gaping trauma, I don't believe that that's a good move. I think we should treat people that have obvious life-threatening issues, even if we don't know how they're going to pay for it. I believe that we should give some money to the elderly that have absolutely nothing. But somehow, the Johnson administration convinced the world that everybody needed that everybody needed a retirement, and that you didn't have to plan for anything because Social Security was going to be there. If you had a good job your whole life, then the government would give you a good job for your whole retirement. And the reality is that those of you that are listening that do not receive Social Security yet, if you're below the age of about 57, regardless of what you're being promised by the government, it is extremely likely that your Social Security will be cut or means tested, just because there's no other way it can work. Now, this is not me advocating and saying you guys don't deserve it. You paid into it. You absolutely deserve it. Deserve has nothing to do with it. If you have a kid that's working their tail off all summer long and you lose your job and you can't give them their allowance, it's not the kid's fault. Mm-hmm. In this case, the government didn't lose their job. They've just made a lot of promises that they can't keep because they're making promises for future Congresses to try to keep.
Actually, there's a way. There's several ways Social Security could get healthy in a hurry. One, allow a lot more people to come into the country and take up the jobs at the low end of the scale.
Right. That could happen. That could work. But now, that would go against a lot of big emotion
It would take immigration reform and say we have a lot of unfilled jobs at the low end of the scale.
The other way is you means test the people that are getting it so that if you already have a stream of income, you don't also get this.
That also would mean, by the way, cutting minimum wage for immigrants. The only way it's going to work.
Then you get the liberal side really upset. So you've got both the conservatives and the liberals upset. This is not going
to
work.
The second way to make Social Security get well is to do a combination of means testing and – or it's actually income testing – and bump the retirement age to 70 instead of letting it peak out at 67. Accelerate the move to 67 and then – but run it right up to 70.
It'll be at 67 in the next 4 years or so, I think. So it's not a lot of
but it's 67. Instead of stopping at 67, move it up to 70. Allow immigration. Now, there's a third way, which I think may be the way we do this.
The easiest way is the means testing. If you've got income coming in of a certain amount, then you don't get Social Security.
But that, you know, that works until you realize what people will do with their income to hide it from the
– yeah, they're going to put it in every
– so that distorts things. There is another way, and that may be the way we do it, and that is really pump tax credits or whatever it takes into high-speed innovation to increase productivity, increase the way we produce things. But here's the negative to that. It costs jobs.
Yes, and this is important, and this is vital. We were talking about it last hour. We talked about it this hour. In the year 1900, 80-plus percent of the United States working population worked in agriculture. By the year 2000, 2%. Now it's much less than that. It's less than half of 1% are working in agriculture today as a full-time means of income. What does that mean?
And their jobs are threatened.
What does that mean? Well, when we're looking at robots today and we're saying they're going to replace all these jobs, what happened to 80% of the population? We didn't have an 80% unemployment even when we had the Great Depression. That means that we need to concentrate on the greatest strength that the United States has, and that is in the education of new productive skills. We need to include that in a lot of what we do. And from the perspective of business owners, You need to build some flexibility into your business model. Otherwise, you're going to be outcompeted by people that don't have employees. One of the greatest strengths of the United States, maybe the greatest, it is no doubt, the greatest strength of the United States is the minds of the people that we have here. And if we utilize that strength, if we encourage that strength, instead of getting trapped in the specifics of the exact thing that we're doing, if we continue to retrain and prepare, there's multiple outcomes here. Number one, you don't get unemployed because you've got a skill that's thinking ahead, even if it's a new skill over one that you've earned the rest of your life. Two, you don't get Alzheimer's. You keep learning new things, your brain keeps reacting to those new things. Learning new skills and going out and exercising are the two things that make you live longer and healthier. So learn something new that challenges you and that is in some way productive on the personal level. Figure out how to do that on a business level, how to do that on the entire economic level, and you have a way that we can move out of all of these difficulties without too much difficulty.
By the way, if any of you want to have a copy of Barron's Prescription for Economic Growth in the United States by Gene Epstein, who's one of our favorite economists, send us an email send an email to Jeff at tpwc.com. I'll send it to you free. Barron's allows me to do that as long as I don't charge you anything for it. And then I'll recommend that you go to Barron's. But it is there. It's beautiful for me to look at something and say that is a rational, balanced, non-political approach to getting us out of the hole that we're digging for ourselves. And that all comes around to something. Maybe we ought to do commercials before I go to come around to something.
Yeah,
but I do want to come around to something that you. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. I misspoke a few minutes ago. I just looked it up, and Barron's will charge me to do that. But if you would like a copy of that, I will get a hold of Barron's and pay their fee and get you a copy of How to Save America, which is the most thoughtful article that I have read on the subject so far. It basically provides a certainly not painless, but a very reasonable way to get us from the crisis that we're otherwise going to run into. Very frankly, what's likely to happen as we go into the new year is stocks currently have a lot of optimism behind them. Anything that stumbles along the way, anything that looks like it's not as good as the investors thought, is likely to cause some bobs and bumps in the stock market. I think we're rolling into a major bull market, but that also means we're going to probably see increased variance, increased volatility. We're going to see some scares going into the end of the market. It's going to happen. Get ready for it, but recognize that we are now finally moving beyond recovery in the United States into growth. If you adjust, and I didn't have the numbers exactly right earlier, and Jake corrected me on them, but I didn't say them, didn't publish them. But if you adjust for inflation, the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 are finally about where they were in 2000, a little above that. We are finally out of a major secular bear market that began in 2000. Somewhere along the line, and I suspect it will be sooner rather than later, we go into a real bull market. And the interesting things about high-speed growth, the interesting things about growth at all, is it produces variance or volatility. It is scary. So buckle your seatbelts and get ready for what is a potentially rough ride, but also a potentially very, very successful one. That's the wisdom we have for you right now.
Right. And the concept here, the Bureau of Economic Analysis just came out with an update.
The BEA. I love BEA. Those guys. It's full of bureaucrats.
They admit that they're bureaucrats, and they just came out with a revision to the third quarter's GDP. They say that our country grew, and this is inflation taken out of it and everything else that is that would cause that to be inflated taken out, that our economy in the third quarter grew at an annualized rate of 3.5%. That's pretty spectacular for an economy the size of the United States. Now, how do we get that to continue? What was it that caused that growth? And there's a lot of things that we can point out there, but the majority of those things are new hires coming on board, producing things, earning money, and then turning around and spending that money. So there's a reality here, and this is something that we talked about this before the election. We talked about it since the election. People say this is the Trump bump that we're seeing in the market. They're talking about this thing. The reality is that it's an economic bump. That the fact that we had a big growth rate in the third quarter that was obscured by a really nasty election where there was no room on any news anywhere for anything but the worst possible thing out there. What did Trump say in the bus? What does it say in Hillary Clinton's emails? That's the sort of thing that we were wrapped up in, completely enclosing ourselves in these massive blinders to keep ourselves from looking around at how good things already were. The blinders were removed because the election was over. And people looked around and said, hey, I feel good. Look at the economy. My pay is up. I'm able to give raises to my employees. I've got these things going well for me. And there's some hope on the horizon that maybe regulatory reform will happen. Maybe tax reform will happen. I don't know how it's going to go because nobody out there knows how it's going to go. But there's some degree of relief felt. And it's backed up by real economic growth. Now, neither Clinton nor Trump had anything to do with that economic growth, or for that matter, did Obama. The growth happened because of you, listeners, the people out there, the United States citizens and people that were working here that aren't citizens caused us to have a growing economy. How do we keep that going? What did you do in the past quarter that you can repeat as far as that growth rate goes? You're talking about the Barron's article about how can we move forward? How do we keep that productivity going? That's what causes growth. That's what causes the market to go up. And underneath it all, we have the incentive to do it in that we get profits and we get to keep those profits. It's nice if we have some tax reform. Here's where I am. Sure, I would love it if taxes dropped. I would love it if spending goes way up. Well, love it temporarily. The chicken is going to come home to roost. It's going to feel good for a while. I want the people that are listening to this program to understand something very basic. People call us consummate optimists, but if you listen to what we've said in the last 20 minutes talking about Social Security needs to be completely reformed, that doesn't sound very optimistic. Talking about the bond market being in a bubble and now even with it corrected and into bear market territory, still in a bubble, still overvalued. There are things that you can do proactively about it in your own life. If you're below the age of about 55, 56, 57, and you're counting completely on Social Security as your income into the future, and you have any other means of support out there, then you better start planning hard on what's going to happen if they cut Social Security for you. That's proactive. If you treat the world like you don't like gravity, that doesn't mean gravity doesn't exist. And we've got some economic rules that we can look up and see. We're not going to be able to continue to grow the debt faster than the economy grows into the future without a major catastrophe happening. Know that people are going to come to that conclusion sooner or later. If you come to that conclusion first, you can plan for yourself and you can help other people plan to prepare your own finances. This is something I tell people in the market, I tell people in good years in their businesses, sock some of that away. This is biblical. It doesn't matter what religion you're talking about. Every religion mentions this. If you're doing well, put some of it to the side, because there's going to be times when you aren't doing well. So we're moving into a period of economic boom. Both of us predict it. Both of us look ahead and say, the United States has a lot of growth that it's about to hit. There's a new industrial revolution about to hit. For yourself, know that when that extra stuff comes in, that extra money comes in, you can add to your standard of living. And I don't recommend against that. But before you do it, you need to make sure that the current standard of living is protected. Put money aside. Savings first. Put it in the bank. Get a good emergency fund there. Then start planning ahead. What can you do with your money that will produce income to offset if they cut Social Security? And in doing that, it may cement the fact that Social Security won't come to you, because you'll have this other stream of income. And this comes to a completely different sort of subject. I've had people in my office that have early retirement from Social Security, and they've just been offered a big contract. And they say, I can go back and work as a consultant, and they're going to give me $120,000, but I think I may just turn it down because I'm going to lose my benefit from Social Security. And their total benefit from Social Security for the year is $24,000. They're going to turn down a $100,000 plus contract for $24,000 just because it seems like free money. It doesn't give it any more value than the other dollars you might make. If you're able to secure a stream of income that is more than Social Security would pay you, and you can do it now, and Social Security may fail between now and then, but that says that you don't get Social Security, it's still better to get that stream of income, whatever it is, to build up your investments, whatever they are, to provide the income in case Social Security is not there. And then you're reliant on yourself. I think the vast majority of our listeners fall in that boat where Social Security, Medicare, welfare are things that may or may not be of value, that it needs to be carefully applied, and that you may not be the one. I mean, most of our listeners, if I said you should go sign up for welfare, they would probably get a little upset. Think of Social Security that way, even though it's not been defined that way for you. If you're receiving it now, you've paid into it, you've earned it. We all have. We've all paid into welfare too. That's where it comes from. So recognize that the promises that the government gave us they're going to have to take them back, at least at some level. And if we don't plan for it, it's going to be a shock when it happens. We talk about this with defense retirement too. If you're in the military and you've got a retirement coming to you, and we've had a lot of people upset with us for bringing it up, because they say we're advocating for it. We're not advocating for the dropping in retirement pay to the military. You guys earned that. You earned it in a way that it's impossible for any civilian to understand. At the risk of your body, and in some cases more than the risk, the actual damage to your bodies. But if the fiscal side of things, if the taxable and fiscal side of government, if they cannot pay for it, and you know that in advance, and you get the opportunity to plan for it, but instead of planning for it, you say it's a bad idea. You wouldn't have done that in the military if you were successful. If you know that there are enemy actions that could impact your plan, and you don't build some flexibility into that plan, you're going to have some trouble. Keep that in mind, because those are huge issues going forward. We're already entering this big boom. We talk about it. You're hearing it. You're feeling it. Looking around, people are being hired. People's wages are going up. Unemployment is dropping through the floor. We're entering into a golden era. Well, now is the time to plan for the next downturn, because it's going to happen. They always do. There's no permanent plateau of prosperity. Anybody that says that, it's a good signal for the next downturn to be about to happen. Anyway, I'm monologuing here. I'm sure you've got some more stuff to bring up too.
Well, you know, other than the fact that for listeners who've tuned in a little later than others, we were talking about the fact that the market is up this year. And it's up on optimism, and almost all of the gains in the market have occurred in the last month or so. And that's the way things really work. Do we expect more of that to go on? We do. And one of the reasons I think so, and this is a key point, consumer sentiment hit the highest level in 12 years this month. The University of Michigan does a survey of consumer sentiment about the economy. And what happens in the United States, I think it's really important to understand, and this is one of the big unknowns. When we talk about deficits and debts, there are some immutable things out there, pretty close to immutable. There's some other things that we don't factor in because we don't know. One is, the more optimistic we are, the better the economy will perform. Why? Because 70% of the United States economy is us buying stuff from us.
And you buy stuff from each other far more when you're feeling good about yourself and the people around you.
And we just went through a period where we spent way too much money, starting in the, if you want to talk about presidential administration, starting way back in the Clinton administration, we felt good about ourselves and we spent a lot of money. And we borrowed a lot of money, and our debt load went up, and our interest rates kept coming down, and the debt load kept going up, but we kept spending more money because we sensed inflation in the air. Well, inflation is back. It's not back by much, but we're starting to see it in some critical places. Let me tell you where. Let me give you an example. Housing sales in the United States, existing housing sales, were up dramatically. I won't give you the exact numbers because they'll make your eyes water with boredom. But they were up dramatically in November. Why were they up in November? Because people could see interest rates rising. So as the cost –
I'll give the eye-watering boring number. 15.4% up year over year.
Yeah, well, I was going to give the actual number of houses sold. But...
okay. 5.6 million houses.
And we have the highest – new house sale rate. It was up 12.7% over last year. Why? Well, because interest rates are going up. You would think, okay, if interest rates are going up and it's becoming more expensive to buy a house, why are people buying houses?
Because they're afraid it's going to be more expensive to buy a house.
So as prices start back up again and interest rates start back up again, you can expect to see an economic surge. And we're going to see that. We have to be careful not to choke it off. For example, and I really don't think the Trump administration is going to impose 35% tariffs on stuff being imported in the United States. I don't think they're going to do that because it would wreck the economy.
45% from China, 35% from Mexico. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
Basically, it would increase the cost of things you bought in the United States dramatically, very, very quickly, and people would be very, very unhappy, and then they wouldn't reelect Trump. And since his definition of success is success – is winning, I don't really think he's going to do something that will torpedo the economy. So, but the point that I want to make here is we're going into what looks like an accelerating economy. Well, it's that time when we also want to put a little bit of damper on the fire, because you got to put it well in advance. There's going to be some bumps along the way.
Yeah, we don't want to use up our fuel before we're done going where we want to go.
And the other thing is, consumer sentiment is up on what? Basically on the fact that it looks like things are going to break out. I completely agree.
Yeah, it's up because people's pay is up. If we look at wages, if we look at unemployment, if we look at housing prices, if we look at all the things that cause people to feel better about themselves and about the people around them, all those things look good right now.
Now, let me throw in something else.
I have something too. So
we had two sets of news articles that came out on the same day, yesterday, to do with the same report from – I love this fact. The articles that came out mostly said the Commerce Department Durable Goods Shipments and Orders Report.
This is fantastic.
And it is indeed from the Commerce Department, because the Census Bureau is part of the Commerce Department.
Right. So is the BEA.
But it was in fact from the Census Bureau. Now, this is the point. In the United States, when I looked around, Reuters picked it up as a jump in manufacturing activity. The Wall Street Journal reported it as a 4% drop in manufacturing activity.
Bloomberg's orders for U.S. business equipment increased more than forecast. So did it drop? Did it increase? What is the difference
really,
here?
Really fascinating. The Wall Street Journal, you wouldn't believe that if you read the Wall Street Journal report on this, you looked at CNN or Reuters, Financial Times.
Completely different news on the same subject.
And the fact – and this is the one of the things you have to – I think we have to look at when we talk about – when we see news media reports on things like the unemployment rate or anything else. In Great Britain – and Reuters, by the way, was originally based in Great Britain and still thinks that way. When something is shipped is when they record it as happening. That's the deal. When the product is shipped.
And you order something and they ship it to you.
And product shipping in November for manufacturers in the United States was up 0.09%.
So all of the Brits are saying, yep, there's growth going on there in that particular report.
And it wasn't expected to be up at all, and it was up. So we ship more stuff than was anticipated. The Wall Street Journal, on the other hand, and American economists say shipping is not important. What's important is how many orders did they get, which will be shipped next year. And that dropped 4.6%. Now, if we start pulling numbers out of there, for instance, we had a cut from Boeing and a big surge from the government from defense spending. It actually dropped 6.6% if we pull out.
I have another big reason for that
Boeing.
Drop, that for the new shipments. They're measuring
– not new shipments, new orders.
I'm sorry, new orders. The orders that are going in, they're measuring what month?
November.
What was happening at the beginning of November?
An election.
And everybody was saying, I'm going to wait and see. So as a percentage of November, it was less than 5% of November. So the reality is that there were probably more orders made at the end of November, a lot more than at the beginning of November. And that's one of the difficulties in looking at this data, is that a lot of the people, when we talked about this in October and into November, that a lot of people were delaying making orders for new shipments until they figured out what was going on with the election. Well, the election's done. We're measuring the month that had that in it. And I expect for December that we're going to see a lot of new orders and new shipments.
Well, actually, the economist is saying they're not seeing that. And the reason they're not seeing it is because, unlike the general population, which is very optimistic, business owners and executives are actually selling stocks pretty fast right now in their company, now that they've run up. But the reason they're saying that is saying, yeah, it looks like he wants to do all this stuff, but we're going to be cynical and say maybe Congress won't let him.
I'm not talking about Trump. People weren't waiting to make their orders because Trump was going to be elected or because Clinton was going to be elected. They were waiting to make their orders because they didn't know who was going to be elected. Those orders are still going to go forward. Now, some people are going to say, I don't like Trump. And some people are going to say, I wish Clinton was there. Successful businesses don't run on who's in the Oval Office. Successful businesses run on how to be profitable, how to be great for their customers, how to get the best price on their merchandise with the best quality. And we're about out of time.
We are about out of hour, and this has been the Personal Wealth Coach for the last 2 hours with a unwarranted interruption by Fox News. But if you'd like to contact us off the air during the week, of course, we have a voicemail during the weekend, but during the week, we have real live on it. We don't have a phone tree. You can give us a call at 254-947-1111, or
you can reach that number toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can read our podcasts and listen to our listen to our podcast, read our philosophy, read our newsletter. You can email us directly, and we use those at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Until next week, have a Merry Christmas. from the personal wealth coach.
KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood, the best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEM.